organized an extremely sophisticated proxy campaign to regain control even before restoration occurred. A number of us ran for the voting trust. Several of us were voted in, and this meant a lot of work on the parts of people. We had to call up people. We had to go and track them down. We had to get their proxies, their signatures. And the other side was willing to fight, too. And so we would go, oftentimes we would get one proxy, and the people would come in right after us and get their proxy. So we never really knew completely accurately what the proxy count was. But we appealed to the sense of tribalism. We appeal to the love of land, which we know is in the hearts and minds of all Indian people. And so, to make a long story short, you know, we won. Now, we had to undergo a lot of opposition. We were called, you know, agitators and outsiders and unemployed and so on and so on. And there were a number of us eventually ended up in more leadership positions. But many of our people gave money. They marched. We had a big march from our reservation down to the capital, Madison, Wisconsin. Now, before that, I had never walked it more than 3 or 4 miles in my life. Well, that day I walked 10 miles. And a lot of our people really got behind this. Now, I should say that there were people who didn't think that anything could be done, including some of our own tribal members. They didn't want to be involved in anything controversial. They didn't want to be involved in any conflict. And we had numerous demonstrations in which we all were quite concerned what would happen. I remember the first time we had approximately 200 people demonstrating against our land sales. We had this joint venture with this developer coming in, and they were importing people from Milwaukee and Chicago, and they had big steak dinners and airplane rides and the whole hoop-de-doo. And we would show up at these dinners with signs. We carried on demonstrations outside these fancy restaurants. We learned to utilize the media just as well as the others. And some of our own people did not appreciate this. Some of our own people did have jobs selling land. Even now, I wonder how they could do it. But on the other hand, people are people, and people need to survive. And so we did not have 100% support from our people in all of these efforts. Nevertheless, we did regain control of the voting trust, and when there were only two or three of us that were on this 11-member trust. I was elected chair of the voting trust, more or less by default, because it takes a lot of work to be in a leadership position, as many of you know. And no one would really believe that I would drop out of law school and come back and work for the tribe, which is what I did. And I had been wanting to be a lawyer for a long time. I'm very happy to say that I did not go back to law school, but I have a sister who's a nurse and a lawyer. At any rate, I figured you could always go back to law school, but you couldn't always get involved and assist with a social movement. At any rate, the restoration did occur. We set up a whole new tribal governmental structure. We have a 9-member tribal legislature with 3 people elected each year, so we have continuity. We have the tribal legislature electing the chair of the tribe on a 1-year basis, so it's not a popularity contest among the tribal members. We have a trust and management agreement. We decided not to call it a treaty. We have a trust and management agreement that maximizes tribal sovereignty, that tells and spells out what the Secretary of Interior can do and what they can't do. And we are on the road now toward community development. We got a health clinic, $1 million health clinic. We got a grant from the Economic Development Administration to renovate our tribal lumber mill. And our land base is secure, our tribal government is set up, and I feel that we have demonstrated to the Indian people of the country and to all the citizens in the country what can be done utilizing the political process. I think with that, I'll stop and then have additional comments and questions from you all later on. But what I want to say is that the people were mobilized. They could see how important it was to make a change, and they didn't acquiesce in what the government's laws were. We did exercise our rights of civil disobedience. Some of our people did spend a couple days in jail for, you know, trespassing, but that was a small price to pay for regaining the tribe. We could all see that if we had done nothing, if we had acquiesced, that our control of our assets would have continued to decrease. This white financial institution would have exercised their judgment, making decisions for us, and our land was going to be overrun by white people. As it is now, the land project was stopped, and there are still people up there who bought vacation homes, but they are definitely in the minority. We also have a county and a reservation. Now, I think that this is very difficult for people to understand, but really it isn't. We became a county in 1961. All the members of the county board of directors have been Menominees. I think there may have been one person that wasn't. And we have a tribal legislature, so the county and the tribe do cooperate. As a matter of fact, the county administrator is a member of the tribal legislature. The control has been returned to the Menominees. The Menominee people directly elect the members of the tribal legislature. The Menominee people directly elect Menominee Tribal Enterprises Board of Directors. We have two entities, a legislature and a business organization in the tribe. And we felt that it would be to the tribe's advantage to separate the business operations from the legislative operations. We have a court system. One of the newest buildings going up there is now a jail. Another interesting fact is that we decided, again, to maximize self-determination, to maximize tribal sovereignty. We finessed the Public Law 280 issue in the restoration legislation. We didn't say much about it. And I should say that it requires a great deal of discretion and judgment to finesse a piece of legislation of this magnitude through the Congress. I should say that we started out in the Congress with a Democratic congressman as our congressman, David Obey. And he stated that he believed, after we battered the door down and got past his aides, which took quite a while, he said he believed that we had a cause, and he would introduce the legislation, but he didn't think it would get very far. So we said, fine, you know, just introduce the legislation, and we'll proceed from there, which is what we did. Well, after a while, there was a change, and we ended up having a czar congressman in 1973, a very conservative Republican congressman, who, as it turned out, and as I found out through some sleuthing up on the hill, had a vacation home on our reservation. And he was not necessarily in favor of restoration, but we prevailed and pressured him, and he finally came on to the legislation. So it's important to keep in mind the political climate and the cultural climate and the legal climate. And again, I want to emphasize the moral and the ethical considerations here. I think too often they get forgotten as we discuss the policies and the procedures and the legalities of all of this. We all need to ask ourselves what's right and what's wrong and what's best for the Native peoples. And I feel that even though the Restoration Act is not 100% satisfactory to all members of our tribe, we did something that was never done before in the history of Indian affairs in this country, and that is a grassroots movement, a major policy reversal that started at the bottom and then resulted in the passage and the implementation of the Menominee Restoration Act. The chapter is not done, and we're proceeding. But to get back to Public Law 280, we decided not to mention that as we went through the legislative process, because we had it in the back of our minds that we wanted maximum tribal sovereignty. And so once we got the Restoration Act passed and so on, we sat down and we discussed how this could be done. Well, of course, this at that time could be done through an act of the legislature. So we looked around and said, forget that, we'll never get that through. What else can we do? Well, we can get the governor. Get the governor? Yes, we can get the governor to do this. So we marched in. Well, we had some meetings. Anyway, we got the governor to issue an executive agreement saying that he retroceded jurisdiction, and we were not under Public Law 280. Now, of course, people say, oh, you got the governor to do this? Well, he's the governor. He's supposed to do these things. So I want to tell you all, you know, you have to figure out what you want to do and then go to it.
Well, thank you very much, Ada, dear. Could I ask a couple of questions before we move on? The tribal land after termination was held by Menominee something or other, Inc.
Menominee Enterprises, Inc., yeah. Yes.
After restoration, is the land held by the tribal corporation or by the tribal government or in some other way?
Well, I guess I'll have to call up and find out. But actually, it's back in trust.
Oh, I see.
The whole area is back in trust. Some Menominees, oh, I should mention this. Some Menominees have individual portions of land that they put back into trust, and some have not done this. I should say, again, getting back to this land issue, people had to pay taxes on their land, and a lot of people could not pay taxes. A lot of the area was surveyed, and people were given or bought certain portions of land, and so a lot of people had a lot of difficulties. And I know that this is an issue here. The land is going to become subject to taxation, and it was a serious problem, and it is a serious problem. Because the county was composed of Indians, they did not foreclose on a lot of that, and they just kind of let it go. So when the Restoration Committee came and when the tribal legislature came, they started to deal with this. And so very little land has been lost through tax foreclosures. And I think, again, this demonstrates having a government that's culturally sensitive. I also want to say that we were successful in doing this because we had excellent legal assistance. We had Mr. Pelaznik, and we had assistance from the Native American Rights Fund. He soon called them, and we had the excellent help of Yvonne Knight, Ponca Indian. She was the first Indian woman to graduate from the University of New Mexico Law School. And we have Professor Charles Wilkinson of the University of Oregon School of Law. And I'm sorry that neither of them are here, but those three people really listened to us, and they fought into the night when they were having all these long legal discussions amongst each other about some of these items. And without their excellent legal assistance, we would not have the model legislation that we had. So I want to make a special commendation. I noticed that now we have two representatives from NARF here today, again, taking part in a very historic action here on behalf of the natives.
Thank you. If we, yes, Alma Yupikson.
I had a question in regards to the termination. In the 1950s, there were many tribes subject to those sort of acts and many more disastrous consequences, for instance, the Klamath. One of the things, as I understand it, that made Menominee different was that the land itself, after termination, was held together under the corporate structure of the bank and trust, and that made a difference as far as the relationship of the members from the tribe and the land itself. What would you say that made Menominee more unique, or unique in the sense that restoration was more possible because of that?
I suppose one could say that. The idea behind this was not this corporate model was not the idea of the Menominees, and I don't know that much about the ANSCA legislation. I doubt that that was the idea of the Native leadership at that time. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
I can correct you.
Okay. my point was not directed to the corporate mode as being recommending that, but just the fact that the land was held in one piece. It wasn't broken up by taxes or sold in other means. And it was in a sense made it easier for the people living on the land to come together as a tribe again.
Yes, I think you could say that.
David Case, you had a question?
Thanks. I don't know if we want to hold these off till.
I think okay. It'd be a good time to ask a few questions before we move on. If that's all
I
right.
Just want to be sure I understood. You said that there was a county and a reservation, and I assume they had the
yes.
same boundaries.
Yes.
And is there also a county government and a tribal legislature?
Yes.
How does it work?
Well, it's working. We have. I haven't checked the latest composition of the county, because I think at one time there was one of the Lake Lot old owners that was on the county board, but
a
non-native person, yes, there may have been one. But the point I want to bring out is that the Menominees control both bodies, and there are white people that live within the county, and they are a problem. For example, the tribe wants to have some housing units built, not all in a cluster, in a square, and in a rectangle, the way HUD wants it, but more compatible with the land, separate houses around some of these lake shores. Now, it always astounds me. These people, they come in, you know, they want to have vacation homes, and they want to get rid of the Indians and occupy the Indians' land. However, we stopped that. And so now some of these people have to live right alongside some of the Indians, and they don't like that. But at this point, the Menominees have the control of the county and the tribal government. And even though we try to make reasonable accommodations, they still do oppose some of the initiatives that the tribe wishes to carry out, and that's one of them.
Is there a fair practical assurance that the Menominee will always have control of the county government because it is also a reservation?
I can fairly predict that because Menominees have received a lot of attention nationally and statewide, and I do not foresee a large influx of white people coming in.
But because it's a reservation, can you also control the influx of non-natives into the county reservation?
I would say yes, because first of all, most of the land is back into trust, and tribal members can put their land back on an individual basis if they choose, and a lot of people have. So there is not a lot of land available. As lake lots become available, as some of those white property owners make changes in their lives, then individual Menominees have bought some of the properties, and the tribe is always interested in doing this, and I think they have done this in some instances.
Can you share with us some of the thinking behind establishing both maintaining the county and reestablishing the reservation tribal government?
Well, we thought it would be helpful and practical to have the advantages of both the tribal structure and the county structure.
Do Do you also get money from the state of from the state to the county?
Whatever counties get, Menominee County gets.
I see. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. One or two additional questions along the same line. I assume the non-Indians vote in the county elections and do not vote in the tribal elections.
Correct.
And I assume that, is there zoning on the reservation?
I'm not sure about that. I know they have a land use committee. I should tell you also that I was involved with the tribe from approximately 1969 till 1976. And so I have not been directly involved in the ongoing activities of the tribe since then. See, I'm a social worker, and I'm into creating independence, not dependence. After we got restoration, after we've got the economic structure set up, we got the health clinic, we got the tribal government, we got the trusted management agreement, I said, okay, I quit, and let somebody else take over.
Well, I'm sure that the, from what we know already, that the, from outside areas, that the county cannot zone the trust land, so the tribe must have zoning power over the trust land. And that the non or the fee land, that's the question, I guess. I don't know how that would be handled. Maybe I can find out later with you in some way.
You mean the non-trust land within the reservation?
The non-trust land within the reservation on the normal reservation in the United States, the Ninth Circuit and other courts have recently held that the tribe has the power to zone that land. And I assume that same reasoning would apply on the Menominee Reservation, but because the two are exactly coterminous, the county and the reservation, well then, I guess I'd be curious to know what actually is done there.
Mm-hmm. I would assume that would be the case, but I don't know for sure.
Ralph Lerner?
Just a small question.
Would you use the mic so it goes on the transcript?
Just a small question, but you piqued my curiosity by something you said. You spoke of the disgruntlement of these white folk who own vacation homes on the lake, that they didn't like the kind of housing that was being projected or was, in fact, built. I have no idea. Oh, was this public housing that you're talking about? I see. Okay.
Sherry, Patty, forgive me, Ginsburg, and then Al Guzner, and then Rosita Wall.
Ms. Deer, I'm with the Alaska Federation of Natives, and a couple of questions come to mind. First of all, the Menominee Indians all had stock, even though many of them apparently didn't really have control of that stock.
We have certificates of beneficial interest and a bond, so we have two pieces of paper.
Okay. When you went after restoration, were there any members of the Menominee tribe who actively opposed restoration, who supported the corporate status?
Yes.
And what was the basis of their opposition to restoration?
Well, I think they didn't think that, they thought we were a bunch of crazies, and they didn't think that we could get this type of legislation through. And also, some of the people were profiting. I mean, they were, you know, they were selling land, and they had nice big salaries, and, you know, they were doing okay. So, not all of them, some of them.
Then, did anybody raise the question of unconstitutional taking? I mean, what I'm getting at is whether this whole issue of the constitutionality of it, of giving people shares and then taking them back, whether that issue arose at all.
Well, it may have in some discussions, but not. Actually, I really shouldn't. I can't say that 100% sure. I'm sure. I know that that's a theoretical question, but we actually never had to confront it because we knew what we were doing was what the people wanted. And as I said earlier, when some of these legal questions would come up, we would get different interpretations from some of the our lawyers and. And we would just tell them what we wanted to get done, and then they would do it. Now, I know that this question of the stock was a question, but again, it was the lawyers that were discussing all this, and we didn't let them do what they always wanted to do, which is another point I want people to really understand, that these lawyers were very responsive to what we wanted, and there were honest differences and honest philosophical differences in some of their approaches, but they listened to what we wanted and did it. Now, I should say, this gets to be real technical, but the MEI still exists. Menominee Enterprises still exists as a state corporation. They have some people that have to be appointed every year, but it's kind of a paper corporation. And I think later on, as we get down the pike, maybe we'll do something about that. But at this point, there is the state corporation that still exists for some reason. And I think that this will have to be settled later on, but it is, in my opinion, at least it's a minor problem at this point.
Just before we go to your question, Mr. Guzman, Professor Johnson, do you have any comment on the question that Patty Ginsburg raised about the Constitution?
Now, I don't think there's any doubt about what the such a restoration, just hypothetically, well, the best answer is that the Menominees had shares of stock in a state corporation, which were then dismantled, and they then acquired an interest as members of a tribe in the tribal government and the tribal trust land. This is one of those few cases in which one could argue that the Indian Commerce Clause, the portion of the Commerce Clause of the Federal Constitution that says that Congress has the power to legislate over interstate commerce and with Indian tribes, and that power would be used if it were on behalf of the tribe, as it was here. It's used for the tribal purpose, and to pass legislation that would authorize the reconstitution of the tribe, the dismantling of the stock ownership. And I suppose, first, that would be constitutional. I don't have any doubt about that. Secondly, there might be some question, somebody might raise a question about the right to compensation for such a taking. It would be my own judgment they wouldn't win on that, because they would be exchanging one kind of interest for another kind of interest. They'd be exchanging a property interest in a piece of stock, which has variable value and uncertain value. And especially if this occurred before a period like 1991 or something like that, they'd be exchanging that value for an interest in a tribal government and a tribal in a tribal governmental entity that had ownership, beneficial ownership in property. So that, I guess my conclusion from all that conversation is that it could be done constitutionally, and probably no compensation would be due anyone.
Just before we move on, any comment, David Case?
Well, that's the normal result when we're dealing in the field of federal Indian law with this kind of an issue. The trouble that I think we all have with the Claims Act, and it may go that way. That may be the argument, and it may be very successful. But it sounds like it is argument can be made that it does create a present property interest in the stock in these corporations. On the other hand, I don't know of a case in the Indian field where, when this issue has come up, it hasn't been decided exactly the way that Ralph outlined it.
Well, just in case we return to it, I assume that the Menominees each received shares in a state corporation, and since the corporation still exists on the books, those shareholders were not bought out. The corporation wasn't dismantled, and I assume there was an assignment from the corporation by congressional fiat to the tribal government or to the tribally held corporation. At any rate, without getting submerged in a sea of technicalities, we might just keep that in the back of our minds and return to it later. Al Guzmer, you had a question.
Yes, and during your presentation, it does sound an awful lot like what we are going through up here. From your point of view, you have your county, your tribal government, and the federal government, so you have a trilateral agreement between the state, federal, and yourself. My question is two questions, really. First of all, during on your county legislature or assembly, do you confront problems that we confront up here, such as the state's artificial barriers pertaining to your funding programs for your different projects? Is there artificial barriers such as a waiver of your sovereign immunity, the non-discriminatory clause, and who you got to hire, and what the money is going to be used for? As for instance, if I get a $250,000 grant from the state, that I have to waive my sovereign immunity and open that particular property up to the public. That is one question. And another thing that we are going through up here is, as in the case of Akechak, dissolving the municipal government. And from what I see, this is the same thing that's going on in the Menominee Reservation. You have the tribal government, you have your municipal government, and you have your federal government. And that did pose an awful lot of problems up here as far as the funding source, the recognition of the state, the government-to-government relationship. Do you have those problems on there also?
Actually, to answer your first question about the problems of the county government, I'm not as fully informed about that because I've been away from the tribe now for a number of years. And whatever problems the Menominee County government would have would be basically due to the fact that they're a county government. So I can't really fully answer your question. The fact that both bodies, the tribal legislature and the county, are Indian, though, does result in less conflict.
Do you have a relationship with the state of Wisconsin on a government-to-government basis?
The county government does. The governor of the state, Governor Anthony Earle, has just issued a policy statement, and he stops just short of issuing a government-to-government statement. He is supportive of Indian governments, but I would like him to issue, you know, a proclamation at this point. This hasn't been done, but I think that his interest in this support has been demonstrated. He did address the National Congress of American Indians National Convention, which was just held in Green Bay, Wisconsin in October. We do have a governor's policy advisor on Indian affairs that sits in the governor's office. And so we have a sympathetic, a liberal governor in Wisconsin that wants to negotiate rather than litigate a number of the Indian issues. And I think that with that type of attitude by the governor, that the Indians of Wisconsin will be able to work out a much better relationship than some other states.
But, just before we go on, might I just say that, ask some of you who are still to speak to bear Mr. Guzman's question in mind, because as I understand it, and I'm subject to correction, the state does provide funds and assistance to traditional tribal councils and to IRA councils here, but does ask them to sign a waiver of sovereign immunity and does as well ask them to agree that the funds will not be distributed on a basis that discriminates in favor of Alaskan Natives. I think that's... I hope I do understand what we're talking about. Some of you might, as we come to you, tell us whether in your states you run into anything quite like this. Did you have another question, Mr. Guzman?
Yes, and you said you had a tribal corporation. I assume that you also go through the proxy war every year?
No, we don't have proxy wars anymore. We have absentee ballots. You can vote by absentee ballot either in the tribal legislative election or in the tribal corporate election.
Just one more quick one here. In your your tri-government, do you come up with problems such as getting projects and funds for your tribe? Do you have problems coming up with agreement between the tribal legislature, the county assembly, or?
As I indicated earlier, I know there's been consultation and cooperation, and there has not been confrontation that could be. I'm not saying everything is rosy, but generally speaking, it's one of cooperation.
Thank you. I'd like to get back to you further on that later.
Yes.
You mentioned in passing that you would welcome a proclamation from the governor, but you didn't say what you had in mind.
Well, I would like the people of this country, the state governments and the federal government, to recognize the government-to-government relationship between the Indian tribes and the state governments and the federal government. Throughout history, there's always been this thrust to, assimilate Indians, to try to force them to conform. And if I had my way, I would like to see the textbooks of this country rewritten so that the school children, all children, would learn about the tribal governments, the federal government, and the state governments. I think that would eliminate a lot of problems that we have.
I need another sentence.
Yes, please.
I mean, you're not talking about the rewriting of textbooks. When you say a recognition of a government-to-government relationship, you don't mean recognition of the relationship of the state of Wisconsin to the county of Menominee corresponding to its relation to the county of Kenosha or whatever.
I'm talking about the recognition of tribal governments as equal units of government. Well, actually, that's another whole legal question of, you know, what the tribal governments are equal to. One of the one of the designs that I've seen is that there's, you know, the federal government and the tribal and the state governments are on an equal level. Of course, as we know, tribal governments existed before many of the state governments.
So your answer is equal to the states.
At least equal to the states. I think since the tribal governments were in existence before the state governments, I would even put them above state governments.
The President Reagan, in his statement on policy towards Native Americans issued in January 1983, said that the federal government, under his administration, intended to recognize Indian governments on a government-to-government basis as sovereign entities. You may think that's an unlikely source for that sort of policy, but it is plainly stated. Ralph Johnson, and then Rosita, and then Daly.
I don't know how much you want to cover at the moment. Mr. Guzman raised the question of sovereign immunity. The federal act restoring the Menominees did not remove the Menominee tribal government sovereign immunity. The enterprise is subject to suit because it's a business corporation. There are really two questions. One is the waiver of sovereign immunity in federal or state court, and the other is waiver in tribal court. The Menominees in their constitution have a special provision by which they waived sovereign immunity for certain circumstances in tribal court. And that was a voluntary act of the Menominee people to waive that sovereign immunity. For example, when a police officer abuses his power, then sovereign immunity is waived for that kind of conduct, or any tribal official abuses their power. But otherwise, well, then it's a natural product of the fact that there is the sovereign immunity is there, and it is a natural product of the fact that the tribe is a sovereign governmental power. There's a lot more we could talk about, maybe should do so later, about sovereign immunity. But maybe that speaks to the question you raised.
Might return to that. Perhaps we could Rosita Worrell and then Bailey Sambo, and then we'll move on.
No, my question's already been asked about corporations and shareholders.
Bailey Sambo.
I was just curious about from my own understanding, the division of services or the division of authority or division of jurisdiction between the tribal legislature and the county itself. Is there? It sounds like there's quite a bit of cooperation between the two, but what is the division, or is there? I'm sure there must be.
Yes, that's kind of a long and detailed answer. And since it's been a while since I've thought about this, generally, the tribe does what tribes do. The county does what counties do. And without really consulting the county authorities, I don't think I can fully answer that question. I think it's an excellent question, and I think probably more research needs to be done, by the commission on this matter. But again, they've been cooperating, and for example, they've been cross deputization of the tribal police and the county police, and that has facilitated law enforcement on the reservation. And again, I want to point out that when people use their creativity and their imagination and are willing to look at what the problem is and to cooperate, you can do new and different things.
The Alma, you pick some.
Eddie, you'd mentioned two areas that might parallel Alaska. One was the taxation, and that you'd said had more or less been resolved because land was not lost in that way. And that roll closure was a problem that termination resulted in. What happened after the restoration effort? Were there problems with re-enrolling those who had, mm-hmm. during that 10-year period, not okay. been?
The Menominee Restoration Act provided for, the opening of the rolls and setting up a new tribal constitution and bylaws, and for, again, the recognition of the Menominees as a federally recognized tribe. As long as I have the floor, I have to say something about this recognition. I find it really insulting that the federal government has, decides they're going to recognize you or they're not going to recognize you. We are all human beings on this earth, whether we're Indians or Alaska Natives or whatever. And again, this is another legal theory and concept that has come forth. And I think we have to keep this in mind, that we are all here and that we don't really need to be recognized. Yes, in terms of some governmental services or something like that. But this whole concept of recognition and power, I find really irritating. And at any rate, the Restoration Act provided for re-enrollment. We set up an enrollment committee, and we started enrolling people. And I should say that when termination occurred, we had, I think it was 3,270 people in the tribe, and when we completed our first enrollment, we had almost double the number. So even though termination was a devastation on our tribe and many people suffered, our tribe increased. And I think that again shows the continuity and the persistence of Indian people and Indian culture. So enrollment has all the problems that enrollment has, in terms of being able to prove one's ancestors and so on. But for the most part, this has gone well. Now, what was your other question in terms of enrollment and what else?
Tito Naranjo.
How do you define membership presently?
How how we define membership? Basically, a person must be one-quarter Menominee. That's another whole issue, as we all know, you know, blood quantum and who decides membership and this kind of thing. But at this point, that's what it is. Our tribal people can modify this in the Constitution if they wish to, but they would have to then get a certain number of signatures and go through the whole revision, or pardon me, modification of the Constitution, which they can do.
And how many Menominees are there?
Oh, approximately 6,000 at this point.
My impression is that the county government, that the Menominees found it useful to keep the county government going as a vehicle for obtaining state aid, but that the governor of Wisconsin is now moving towards recognizing a state Menominee government-to-government situation that might, I gather, eventually make the county government an unnecessary vehicle. That was the impression I drew from.
Well, what we want him to do is to recognize the tribal government, government-to-government relationship. No, I don't really foresee the county government melting away, because I feel that the county government has been in existence now since 1961, and people have become accustomed to it, and it's not harming us in that to a great extent. Now, perhaps if it becomes, you know, a real detriment, then we would go through the process of changing that. But at this point, I don't foresee that. Let me say that also, termination was seen as a way of, you know, getting the Bureau of Indian Affairs, you know, out of the Indian business of saving money, and actually it ended up costing a lot of money. The federal government had to make a number of appropriations for health services and for other kinds of services on a reservation. I know it was millions of dollars. I don't recall what the exact amount is at this point, but the Menominees basically were a self-sufficient tribe, paid the salaries of the Bureau of Indian Affairs people, and maintained a minimum level of services such as a hospital and some other services, and then to go from that